Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for July 1st, 2021. A few days away from Independence Day, and that's what it is. The day that the United States became independent from England. So, anyway, I'm not going to go into anything political or wokeness or anything like that. But it's a traditional holiday, and I hope you enjoy it. Be safe, and my advice is simply keep away from people who have been vaccinated. And here's the issue, it's becoming, they're calling it a variant, and the doctors I'm talking to, the variant is simply the spike proteins coming off the people who have been vaccinated. That's the variant. Nobody has isolated some kind of variant virus, and this is all hokey pokey because to imagine that there's one virus that everybody's passing around, that it's beyond ludicrous. And then to imagine that there's one variant that came out of, you know, who is this from bats also? I mean, if you took and put a virus in 100 people, you would have 100 variants, not one. They would not all produce the same variant. So how is it there is one variant? I mean, talk about bad science. This is not even science. This is just goofiness. Anyway, the news media can say anything, and the people go around repeating it. I'm not going to talk anymore about that. My advice is just get away from all of the craziness. Find yourself a nice place to live. Go out in the countryside with some nice people that are neighbors. And grow a garden and have clean water, clean food, get off the grid, because a number of my stories today will be about energy. How about the Northwest power blackouts that are occurring probably as this show is going on? Some people listening to battery power radios on shortwave to hear this, and that's something also I recommend is to get a shortwave radio with batteries or wind up. Those are also good, where you have a power supply and a battery operated radio, because this might be the only way you're going to get news someday. I mean, literally, and we've been in that position before. And today there may be people listening in a house with no electricity to a battery operated radio on shortwave to listen to this radio show and to other radio shows. And by the way, I thought I would comment, before my radio show on WWCR, Thursday evening, Tower Number 2, there's a guy named Brother Stair, and he's the last day prophet, he calls himself. But last week, it was interesting, because sometimes I listen to this on the lead up to my show, and he had on a program that he had recorded decades ago, and it was fire and brimstone. I mean, talk about, and he was screaming into the microphone. This is from a radio show he did years ago. And so he's a very conservative, Bible-thumping preacher, you know, old-fashioned. And he laid it out. He said the United States was blessed because of its Christian heritage, and that it's losing it, and that, and this is 20 years ago, and he said the earmarks of the fall of this country are in the writing. And you know, he made no bones about exactly what was going on. The people have lost their values. They've given in to every sort of compromise little bit by little bit until they've lost all their values. They don't even know what they are anymore. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but this guy was right on. I mean, he was exactly point on, and this was like, I think it was 20 years, may have been even 30 years ago. But I thought it was very interesting. Maybe some of you caught that, and it was maybe some of you turned into shortwave radio WWCR right before my show airs, the live show on Thursday evening, and caught some of that. And I listened to a good portion of it. So it must have been 15 minutes, 10, maybe even 20 minutes of that. But it's really, you know, people think, oh, that's just craziness. it's really true, because I have watched in my lifetime where the values of people have simply been eroded little bit by little bit, and that is what people talk about communism or China or Russia and communism. Russia right now is much less communistic than the United States, by far. By far, the United States is far more oppressive, far more communistic than Russia ever thought of being. And of course, Red China is the epitome of communism, but it's run by the World Bank. Communism is a formula for taking down countries, and it's thousands and thousands of years old, the techniques for doing this. And right now, the United States is being targeted and succumbing to basically the, they call it New World Order. These are some tag names, or deep state, etc. But these are just legions of people working literally on the dark side. And so anyway, as we move into Independence Day, and not the day of revolution. In fact, a woman called in yesterday on John Moore's show pointing that out, that this is Independence Day. This is not about winning a revolutionary war. This is about Independence Day. It's totally different, a totally different thing. And what that independence was is independent from the last monarchy that ruled this land, which was the England, the King of England, you know. And so anyway, the whole issue was that the country was founded on Christian principles. Okay, enough of that. But enjoy your Independence Day, July 4th, coming up here in a few days. And I know I will, in a very quiet way. Water, electricity, and food, or electricity, water, and food, or water, or food, electricity, water, whichever order you put them in, they're all very important. And right now, the energy pricing in California is going through the roof. They are expecting it to be 45 cents a kilowatt hour by the year 2030. And it's already spiking to those levels for short periods of time. But what happens when there's a 7% increase in the price of energy? And this is, say, for in a place like California, this is just in the last number of months. Since, say, January, yeah, there's been a 7% increase. Well, the price of, you take all the components, 7% increase, and the price of the product goes up 7%. But what happens when the price of electricity goes up by five times? Not 0.07, but 5.0 times. All of a sudden, everything that you purchase, if it's a hot dog at the ballpark, if it's a hot dog at the grocery store, if it's a piece of bread at the grocery store, every component of that, getting it from the farmer's field, the grain to be ground up into flour, to be brought into the baker where he makes the bread and brings it over to the store where it's sold to you and you drive it home, every component of that piece of bread now is five times as expensive. People, and this is for every product there is, not just bread, it's everything. Energy drives everything, and that's why, by the way, I said with the wing generator that when all of a sudden you start replacing energy costs with zero, not 7% increases, not five times increases, but decreasing down to almost zero after the infrastructure is built, then all of a sudden the cost of goods goes way down, and the people making all the money off of energy, they go away. In the 1800s, there was no energy industry. There was, you know, there was a little bit, but it was not a main component of everything you purchased, because everything was moved by either horses. Horses were the biggest machines around, and then the trains came, the steam engines for farming, and they used to have fires. They used to be out there in the fall, getting the grain in or getting the corn in the big steam engine. They had a big fire in that thing, and that thing would throw out sparks or something, catch the grain on fire, and then burn the whole field down. That was something that happened back in the early days. Remember these big tractors? You can see them like at antique places and stuff, big steel wheels on them, etc. Wow, what an amazing, you know, piece of machinery, but extremely dangerous. A lot of people had accidents around those on the farm. Farming accidents were very commonplace. Now the farmers face things like cancer because of all the chemicals. Farming has always been a very dangerous business. But anyway, the California is in for a five-time increase in the price of energy, but it's not happening in other places, just in California. Why is that? Why is that? Why are power companies allowed to gouge and make huge profits during times of natural disasters or during man-made economic or natural or man-made disasters, whether they're economic, whether they're physical disasters like pouring fresh water from the reserves in California into the ocean, etc.? The cost of goods is directly related to energy. It's proportional. If the price of energy doubles, the price of goods doubles. In fact, it's more than doubling because it affects other things in the supply chain, where people have to charge more in the supply chain. So issue with California, they're also talking about putting in 1.2 million EV car charging stations by the year 2030. This is at a time when they cannot supply the regular power for just the regular usage in California. They're expecting a 450 to 500% increase in the price of electricity, and that does not include putting in 1.2 million car charging stations, for which they don't have electricity. I mean, who's driving this boat? Well, we all know it's the loony, what's his name, Newsom. Nephew of Nancy Pelosi, by the way. Yeah, or some, you know, some relative there, thereof. And now Portland is having 116 degree temperature. That's 116 degree temperatures, Seattle and Vancouver. These massive heat waves are occurring, and the price of electricity going up. But there again, 400% increase in the price of electricity. And is that because that is costing the electric company that much money? No, that is not the reason. They are simply gouging. They're gouging during times of disaster to make extra profit. It's absolutely bizarre. But for those of you who don't remember, back in the when I was a kid, the Northern States Power Company in Minnesota, NSP or whatever, was the public utility company, and there was a public utility commission. And these companies were mandated, regulated, they were public utilities. And that was the case for water, for energy, and for other essentials, primarily water, electricity, or gas, the same thing, natural gas, which was brought in to heat the houses in place of oil, which was heating oil, was a type of oil that was like filtered, and they could burn it, and that's what people burned to keep their houses warm. And then, like when I was a little kid, they converted to natural gas. So they ran natural gas pipelines throughout the city. And so then they began heating with natural gas. And that's been that way ever since. But back to the idea of a public utility. A public utility was an entity which was different than a private company. The utility could not make a profit. At the end of the year, it had to have zero balance. And this was managed by a public utility commission, a PUC, which still exists, but is just in name only. They don't oversee anything. They don't have any power. They're just kind of, I don't know who supports them or who they report to, but they really don't have anything to do with the energy industry. The energy industries were privatized, they were put out in the public, and these are private companies. Now instead of Northern States Power Company, you have Xcel Energy. Covers how many states in the Midwest? And they're a totally independent company for profit, although they're losing money like crazy because of bad management, primarily because of nuclear power. nuclear power is a huge black hole economic drain on these companies. It costs disproportionately more to get them going and then to shut them off. And that's where the big expenses are, and they never count those. Anyway, that's another story. So anyway, the public utility was designed to control the spending at the energy company. And when they went independent, I have a friend who worked as an accountant for Southern Cal Edison, which is the big power company like in Los Angeles. So anyway, he said their economic philosophy was to purchase as much stuff as possible. You didn't just buy a desk. You bought a whole bunch of desks. And it didn't matter where these were going to go, because a lot of money meant that at the end of the year, their books would balance and everything looked hunky-dory. But in the end, they would just buy all of this useless stuff and put it on the tab, and then the customers would have to pay for this. And of course, out of all of this, there had to be money flowing under the table to politicians and etc. But anyway, the PUCs, the true PUCs, went away a long, long time ago, and this was privatized so that energy for profit. And of course, the biggest industry in the world is energy. No question about it. Every product, everything is connected to energy. I don't go to a store, look at any product, and talk about energy. Packaging, all requires is energy. Processing, getting wood, paper pulp, minerals, getting packaging material, processing petroleum to make plastic products. Everything is energy. It all is from electricity. And the majority of that has been coming from coal and natural gas. Those are the two big two. People that think that nuclear is going to solve something are just in la-la land. There's right now the U.S. gets about 7% of its nuclear power from nuclear power plants. About 7%. So that would mean, and there have been no new ones brought online in the past 20 years. So there's no infrastructure for building up nuclear. Getting the fuel for nuclear is a big issue. Doing away with the waste after the process is a big issue. So people who are running around, little greenies jumping up and down, saying that, oh, it doesn't give off carbon dioxide. Let me tell you something. It gives off radiation that is a million times worse than carbon dioxide ever dreamt of being. But this is, I've talked about that on the show before. But the energy companies, who gave them the right to charge exorbitant fees during natural or man-made economic disasters, whatever? Who gave them the right to make exorbitant profits during times that are stressing the public? And who does that hurt? Well, you've got the retired people, the people on fixed incomes, poor people who can't afford another $10 on their electric bill, let alone another $400 on their electric bill because the power companies got greedy that month because there happened to be some kind of natural disaster. And the whole issue comes down to nobody ever talks about, gee, we just use too much energy. We are a civilization that is addicted to energy. But, you know, that could all come to a screeching halt in the New York second, which it has, talking about a New York second and the destruction of a city overnight in terms of New York City. It's been there for literally since the beginning of this country. New York City, of course, started as a port. It's got, and any place that's a port is the very first place, San Agustin, Florida, San Juan, Puerto Rico, where is it in South America? The Fort of Cartagena, which is a fort overlooking a bay where the Spanish could come in and park their boats. It's as simple as that. And so these were the very first cities, and of course New York developed into a major city because coming across the pond as the steamship traffic increased, started bringing, 5,000 to 10,000 people on a trip every week. They could go back and get another 5,000 people and bring them over. So that's a lot of people. A ship is bringing in, you know, literally in a few years, bringing in, you know, hundreds of thousands of people or more. I mean, millions, literally millions of people over the course of a few years. And then, of course, bringing them to New York. And so that was the melting pot. But it's turning around very quickly. The people are fleeing New York because it could be a marvelous place to live. It could be one of the most beautiful places to live. But anyway, that's, I'm sure you're all aware of that. Just a couple quick notes here. Chinese have opened up their largest international airport. Their three biggest cities now sport two international airports in each city. That's how big the cities are. China is progressing, and of course they have huge growing pains. China is a country that is really formidable, and right now the United States is succumbing to just everything that's the Chinese are getting everything they want from the United States with China Joe. It's being sold under the table, and it's going to be gone very soon. There won't be a way that you, as an American, will be able to buy, you know, a loaf of bread, let alone a piece of property. There was a fire. This you should see this online. You may have missed this, but there was a fire in a China parking lot. It was like in a enclosed underground parking lot. A Tesla Roadster got caught. I don't know which model. I don't know was the Roadster, but it was a Tesla automobile. You can see it sitting there. It's got a security camera, and it's all of a sudden it starts to fume, and that baby goes up, and it burned out the entire floor of cars in this parking lot. So there's some issues going on with lithium-ion batteries and exploding. There have been reports recently of lithium-ion batteries exploding in port facilities and causing people to be very hesitant about shipping anything dealing with batteries. And so that's something that I happen to be in that business. I sell batteries, but I sell gel batteries that don't have gel batteries are so safe. They do not have even a hazmat code. They can ship with any other product in any shipping container or any shipping, you know, like truck or delivery, etc. The gel batteries, the gel mat batteries that I sell with the wind energy systems are pretty much harmless. You could take a hammer and punch a hole in the side and nothing would come out. They're acid-based battery, but the acid is in the gel, in the battery, and it's not going to come flowing out or anything. And they're just they're very safe batteries to be around. I mean, if you put 20 of them together and you have 240 volts, then they're dangerous in that respect. They're dangerous because they have provided a lot of energy, electrical energy, but in terms of the physical battery exploding or something like that, they're just not, it's not in their character. It's not the way they're put together. But another thing, and you probably have noticed this, if you've purchased a replacement battery for a telephone anytime recently, that battery sometimes doesn't even last a month. You get it, you put it in your phone, you think, oh, good, I'm good for another year or two with my telephone, just like the original battery that came with the phone. Nope. No, the battery that you're putting in there as a replacement may get you through another 2 months if you're lucky. So amazing, you know, but the other issue is that the technology with lithium ion is still far from solved. Other batteries do not discharge internally, and that's the issue. The lithium ion batteries discharge internally and they start to break down, and then all of that energy that's stored in the battery starts basically running through the battery at that current, and it starts to burn it up and it starts to self-destruct. And at that point, all of that stored energy, which is a lot, we're talking In a Tesla automobile that's fully charged, we're talking 100 kilowatt hours of energy. That is a boatload of energy. That's a lot of stored energy. And if all of a sudden that comes out and unloads, it can burn, literally burn the car up, including the metal. But in this case, it got other cars around it burning, because once the metal starts burning in the paint, I don't know if you've ever seen a car burn. I have. One time I saw a high-speed chase, and it was two civilians. It was not police. It was two civilian cars, and they came around this corner, and I don't know what the defugality was, but certainly it was somebody did not want to, somebody wanted to physically harm the people in the lead car. And so the front car rolled over and caught on fire. And so I don't know if there was gasoline involved in the fire or whatever. I don't know exactly the story, but once the car started on fire, literally the car was burning. And by the time that thing got done, there was not a lot left. I mean, because aluminum burns, most metals, the only thing that would be really left would be the block engine. And, you know, maybe if there was real steel in the door panels and the frame, the big frame components were there still. But that thing burned. I mean, it was really almost completely burned. So what this Tesla car did is it got the cars burning on the sides, and then those cars got other cars burning, and this thing spread through a parking lot. All started with one lithium-ion set of batteries. And so, I mean, what if you're driving down the road, you're with your family, you know, going on a holiday, and all of a sudden the car next to you, you know, in your tight traffic, you can't go anyplace. What if all of a sudden the car next to you, you know, goes, you know, ballistic, goes Tesla on you? I guess that's the term, and not Nikola Tesla. We're talking, you know, Tesla car Tesla on you. That would be a new term, to go Tesla on you. And, you know, the old term to go postal means the guy goes haywire and starts, you know, on a rampage. But going Tesla on you means that the car next to you all of a sudden explodes and starts burning. And that battery is not going to, there's no way they've had firefighters on the scene where Teslas are burning, and they can't put the fire out. That fire is not subject to oxygen or firefighting foam or anything else. It's burning inside the battery. All of that energy is being expelled. And man, that's a lot of 100 kilowatts hours of energy in that little space burning up. Wow. So at any rate, with the proliferation of lithium-ion batteries and also the proliferation of manufacturers of lithium-ion batteries, they're getting cheaper and worse quality, is my point. And, you know, also, you know, planes, they ask you if you have a lithium-ion battery. They cannot go into storage underneath, because if that thing sets off a fire in the baggage compartment on an airplane, believe me, you got problems. Speaking of airplanes, okay, I'm going to jump on to the next topic. This has been reported, and I think I talked about this last week, that pilots from major airlines there have been many, many canceled flights, because pilots were one of the first ones, of course, to be told they have to get the vaccination, the alleged vaccine for COVID-19. And so they all go out and get it. But pilots are susceptible to blood clots. And those blood clots get free in a system, and they move and they get lodged in a vessel in the brain. They cut off the oxygen to the brain, and bam, within minutes, the person is dead. And so people are being hauled off of airplanes who've had the COVID shot. So they're telling people, this is just backwards of what they said. Is they said, if you get the COVID shot, you can travel, you can do whatever you want, you'll be a free person again. So everybody runs out and gets the COVID shot, only to find out that it's causing people to have increased number of blood clots. So here's a pilot who's up and down, high pressure, low pressure, on an ongoing basis, and is susceptible to blood clots, getting a shot being ejected into them, that increases the chance of blood clots. And you got a guy driving a plane. This is not a bus driver on the road. Of course, that's dangerous too, or anybody even driving a vehicle that would be subjected to having increased number of blood clots. Wow. You know, you got a guy with 300 people in an airplane, 35,000 feet in the air, that has the potential of dropping over dead in minutes. I think, yeah, Houston, we got a problem. As the astronauts used to say, Houston, we have a problem. And so lots of flights are being canceled. This is, you know, the beginning of the absolute disaster is just beginning. And the other thing is kids are very susceptible to the spike proteins that are being given off by adults that have had the shots. It's also very clear that the news media has stopped reporting on the deaths related to airline passengers and especially pilots. The first week that this story came out was that four British Airways pilots died. And, of course, the first thing they say is, oh, the fact checkers are out there. Oh, no, this could not be related to the COVID shot. And, of course, it's, you know, it's very bizarre. How often do you have four pilots from a major airline dying in the same week? These are people that are tested. They, you know, are in the prime health. They're driving an airplane with 300-400 people in it and landing and doing complex maneuvers. And it's not like somebody can, you know, like there's a movie where somebody comes back and says, hey, is there anybody that knows how to drive this plane? Like, no, there's nobody in the plane that knows how to drive the plane. I'm sorry. You know, these are people that are trained for their airplane. You know, you could dream about this, but no, on your average flight, there's nobody that can quick run up and jump in the pilot seat and drive the plane in and land it. So, this is the standard mess that people do when they, you know, the original solution for the whole COVID thing, even if it was real, whether, you know, nobody can prove that it's even real or not, but the whole issue is quarantining early, you know, and contact tracing early. You don't do contact tracing after you have millions of people contracting it, the disease or whatever it's supposed to be. You do that at the very beginning, and they didn't do any of it. They just let it all roll until it got out there far enough to where there was no way to do quarantining or any of the traditional methods that would work with something like this. So anyway, yeah, it's a big, big mess. But the other thing is that kids are, it's being reported, and if you look in the right places, and I talk to doctors who are on the front lines, that kids are very susceptible to the spike proteins. These are the proteins that are being created because people got the vaccination, and these proteins can be respirated, so they're breathing out and contacting people that are giving them to people that are nearby, and then the body starts reproducing these spike proteins. And that's causing inflammation, especially in young people, especially the younger they get, the worse it is, which was the opposite of COVID, if there is such a thing, that the children were relatively immune. And now they're trying to get all the kids to take shots, and the parents are going, no, I don't want my kid to get these shots. So there's a wide range of resistance of parents who have been trying to, the government or whoever, Walmart or Target, whoever is trying to get you to inject your kid with a vaccination for COVID. Anyway, okay, I want to talk tonight. First of all, just a quick message. My sink filter is something that more and more people are going to start looking at. And here's the situation. If you have a gravity filter, in fact, you know, one of the biggest products I've sold over the past 20 years are the replacement gravity filters that go in a gravity stainless steel filter. There's other forms of them, plastic, etc. But what I'm encouraging people to do, instead of making that purchase, I would recommend either a sink filter, or the other issue is that I'm encouraging people to make that step now and get a whole house water filter because of the chemicals in the water that are pervasive. And I have a pamphlet. You can go to my water filter webpage and get it for free. If you go to my homepage, jmccsci.com, and click up at the top on water filters, JMCC water filters, click on that. You'll go to a subpage, and that page, just scroll down, and there's a place. It's called What's in Your Water. It's a 10-page pamphlet, and I think it's something, of course, like everything, I produced it myself. But it's really informative, and I don't care where you live, you can have problems with stuff in your water. And I keep having people ask me, can you analyze my water and give me a recommendation? And I've stopped doing that because what I'm finding is I have yet to find a place that has clean water. I'm serious. I don't care if you live in the country or in the woods or in the, you know, up in the Canadian border where you think you have pure spring water or, you know, wherever you are, you're going to have problems with stuff in your water. So anyway, the other thing I'm mentioning is that the above sink filter is a very nice unit, very attractive, stainless steel. It has to be installed. There's a little bit of installation there. But anyway, just want to quick remind you that those things are on my webpage. They're for sale, 10% off. And so, and of course, the replacement filter elements are there and everything. But I'm going to divert here a little bit into a topic. And oops, I forgot something. I was talking about the fires caused by lithium batteries. How could I forget this? Just yesterday, there was a big fire in Illinois at a factory that was housing something like 200,000 pounds. Good grief. I mean, that's like 200, like 100 tons of lithium-ion batteries. That's a lot. That's a whole boatload of batteries. And something caught on fire there, and this whole factory burned up. 1,000 homes had to be evacuated. And imagine the pollution when that lithium ion goes up in the atmosphere and all the plastic and everything else that goes with it and all of the leads and the other highly toxic pollutants go up in the air. That's all going to come down someplace. It's going to come down on people's houses. They're going to be breathing it in. Is technology worth it? Every time somebody jumps on a technology and it's supposed to be the best and mostest at everything like that, what you find is that there are some problems with it. And when I develop my equipment, what I try and do is eliminate that and have a product that's very clean. And no matter what you're dealing with today, believe me, I mean, it's difficult running businesses these days on a world scale or in the United States. Like my business now is national. I canceled any sales to foreign countries, and that is because of shipping. It is just impossible to get stuff shipped anymore. It's taking months and months just to get a small package of four filter elements up to Canada. So what I did is I just said, okay, I can't deal with that anymore, and so my web sales pages now will only process orders from the United States, and that's a shame, but I can't have people out there waiting a couple of months for a product, and then they get antsy and they go, is it really shipped? You know, we have the tracking number and everything, but it's just too long to wait for a product when they're overseas, you know, and it ships, that's 2 months after it ships. You know, sometimes it doesn't ship right away. Sometimes there's a day or two for the big, like the MR5s, so we can ship those out the next day. Some of the other stuff depends on production cycles and order cycles, etc. But after it's shipped, a couple months and it's still not there, no, I can't do that anymore. So anyway, no more foreign orders, which is a shame. But the fire in Illinois, oh my goodness, is technology worth it? Lithium-ion batteries. And, you know, every time I hear somebody talk about a new battery technology, I just kind of cringe. Because the batteries that I use, the gel batteries, I've talked about this before, they don't even have a hazmat number. They're so safe. And even if you fully discharge them or drop, a screwdriver across the terminals, they are limited as the amount of current they can put out at a given time. They're not infinite. They just, anyway, you don't want to do that. But still, they're not going to melt down. They're not going to create fires, etc. You know, I mean, the if you had sparks or if you had something combustible right there where the sparks were occurring, if you dropped a screwdriver in the terminals, then you could start a fire. But most places where it's big battery banks are stored, you don't have, bedding or paper or other stuff around that could burn. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about PFAS chemicals and chemical removal because this has been in the news, and I want to talk about some of the different methods that people are using to remove PFAS chemicals. But here's the problem. The methods that have been developed, and they're testing these now on military bases, there's companies that are saying, they're saying that they have these spiffy methods of removing PFAS chemicals from land or neutralizing them or whatever. There's no method of mass elimination of PFAS chemicals. I don't care if it's farmland or in the water table or coming out of a military installation or whatever. We're talking about hundreds of millions of gallons a day. The average person in the United States, for example, there's 350 million people in the U.S., the average person uses 100 gallons a day. So that's billions of gallons of water per day. Now, how are you going to get the PFAS chemicals not out of just that water, but out of the supplies that provide that water? It's an impossible job. The people that are, there was just a seminar yesterday, and it talked about removing PFAS chemicals, and they're using a 40-foot shipping container, and they can remove a little bucket full of PFAS chemicals per day. That's a drop in the bucket. I mean, it's literally nothing compared to the extent of this problem. And that's what happens when you give the problem to government officials, when you give it to universities, or when you give it to corporations that want to make money. They just have no clue. It's like they have their nose up to the blackboard. And it's an old expression for teachers, university professors. They would come in and they'd be writing on the blackboard, and it's the same thing they'd been writing on the blackboard for 20 years. And their nose is up against the blackboard, so they can't see anything they're writing, and they certainly can't see the students. And so that's an expression. You know, the professor's got his nose on the blackboard. But anyway, these people just don't have a clue of the extent of this problem. Now, in my pamphlet that I told you about that you can get for free, there's a map of all the PFAS identified locations in the United States that have serious PFAS forever chemical problems in their water. And, I mean, these are hundreds and hundreds of cities. And these companies that are claiming they can take PFAS chemicals out of the water are using a 40-foot container. The scale here is so bizarre and beyond what these people are imagining that it's just bizarre. And so what I've determined is the only way to deal with this problem, the only way, because look at an Air Force base, like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base out of Dayton has been polluting the water table for decades. How are you going to get that PFAS chemical out of the water table? Okay, now I'm going to skip a little bit here to another process that people are touting. It's called plasma. And what they do is they take water in a test chamber, and they take hundreds of electrodes, electrodes below and electrodes above, and then they put a high voltage through like these plasma pins. They're little metal pins, and then the current runs between these. And what it does is it breaks down the PFAS chemicals using it breaks the bonds. These PFAS chemicals they're very large chemical chains with carbons and fluoride. And so anyway, here's the problem. They break it down into little teeny pieces, but the CF chains, whether they're small, and you can imagine these are like hydrogen carbon chains. Those are the hydrocarbons, typically what we consider to use for fuel. And the small ones like benzene are short chains, and then you get the big ones like crude oil is a huge various different chains of carbon and hydrogen. Well, here we're dealing with carbon and fluoride. And so it's when you break these down, you get little teeny pieces. And the end result is that you don't get rid of the carbon fluoride change down on a micro scale. And all of these are toxic. So they make the claim that, we're getting rid of the PFAS chemicals, not realizing that they're making thousands of other toxic chemicals in the process. Do you see how brain dead these people are? And then they're claiming that they can, and then the government officials goes, this is a process to get rid of. They claim they can take out 1,000 times more, but they're not taking it out. They're breaking it up, and this pulverized chemical soup is still in the water. And so, sure, there's no more PFAS chemicals. They're broken down into little pieces. So for every PFAS chemical chain, for every molecule that you used to have, now you have 100 little pieces that are just as toxic. So what have you gained? Nothing. And it drives me crazy to watch these people, and then they present it to the government, and the government officials don't know the right questions to ask. And what you'll find about government officials is they come into a program with a preconceived idea, and they're not very bright. They're not the brightest bulb on the tree, and they have to make some kind of decision. And at the end of the decision, then they grant contracts, and these people come in, claim that they've cleaned up the water when they have not, and they get paid. I mean, it just doesn't end. So anyway, there's another method of taking the chemicals out in which you bond them to other chemicals. In other words, if you have a field with PFAS chemicals, now you have to repollute that field with another chemical, and that chemical goes in like a foam, grabs the PFAS chemicals, and basically makes a bigger chemical out of it. And that process, there again, you have not solved the problem. You have not removed the PFAS chemicals. There are some processes that actually remove PFAS forever chemicals, but they cannot be scaled to the national scale level. They cannot be scaled. And this is one thing, by the way, that I had to deal with the wing generator. When I developed the wing generator, I, as a physicist, as a mathematician, as a person experienced in energy and working in industry, I understood the issue of scaling. I understood the scaling, for example, when you went from sailboats. I've designed and built sailboats. That's an issue of scaling, where the bigger the boat, you know, there's different scale factors. So when you're building bigger and bigger sailboats, you have to understand scaling factors and how you can make a 100-foot boat or a 30-foot boat, and they both work properly with the proper amount of ballast, the proper amount of keel, the proper amount of sail, etc. I mean, and there are very major factors. But the people that do these processes don't understand scaling, and that's what happened with NASA back in the 1970s when they did the first three-blade wind turbine examples. They took out and made a little model, put it in a wind tunnel, and it was fairly efficient, and they said, okay, now this is the model to use. So all the big companies go out there and make three-blade wind turbines, but they don't scale. The bigger they get, the worse they are. They can't spin fast. The air blows right through them. 95% of the air blows right through them without ever touching the blade. How can that do real work? It can't. I mean, people are brain dead. A scientist asked me one time after realizing that what I did with the wing generator, asked me and then realized how worthless the three-blade wind turbines are. came to me and said, how could all of these people work for General Electric and Siemens and be professors in universities and teach engineering, and nobody saw this, that these things don't work? I said, yeah, because people repeat things. Engineers don't think. They take something that exists and they can make it bigger. They can make it structurally sound so it doesn't come flying apart. But it doesn't work. The main core idea to produce electricity, and it doesn't work. And nobody notices. Nobody noticed this. And the same thing with scaling up these processes to clean out water. They don't notice that it can't scale to the national level. And with my wing generator, that's one thing. My main focus when I was doing the design work was, can this thing scale? And as I took turns, the right, left, turn right, what about this aspect of the design? If it didn't scale up to big sizes, then it didn't make it into the final design. Anything that worked against scaling up to something that was big enough to replace a nuclear power plant did not make it into the design. And so here you have people on a national scale dealing with water. As I said, in the United States on a given day, and I'm just talking about the people use of water, industrial uses use a lot more water. So we're talking about a trillion gallons of water per day, potentially in the United States, that has to be it has to be cleaned before it's used. But getting back just to the personal use, to clean these PFAS chemicals out of the water, the only way to do it, because additionally, let me add this to the conversation, PFAS chemicals are in the piping. They're in the distribution piping on the municipal pipes. They're like scale. They scale onto the sides of the pipes. And every now and then they break off and they break up into little pieces and they come down into the pipes and into the tubing in the house, etc. And so you cannot solve this problem by removing it at the source, at the water well, or at the aqueduct or the tanks where the water of the city is held. The only place you can solve this is where the water comes into the house. It's the least expensive and most effective way of cleaning up water with PFAS chemicals. But see, now, if they have a process to clean up PFAS chemicals, what about all the other pollution in the water? They're not touching that. It doesn't do anything for that. What about fluoride? What about chlorine? What about chloramines? What about glyphosate? What about 1,000 other volatile organic chemicals? What about lead? Prevalent in a lot of water supplies. Their methods do not do anything to clean up them. So, you know, you're spending all this money concentrating on a problem over here and ignoring all these other problems. It's like the issue in Flint, Michigan, that all of a sudden they said, oh, there's lead in the water. So they give people these little Brita filters that turn on the sink faucet that might work for about 30 gallons. And that's their solution. Not realizing that they changed the water supply to the Flint River that has benzene, that has hydrocarbon chemicals of all sorts in it. The river actually burns because it's so polluted. It has lead in it. It has toxins. It has all kinds of chemical pollutants, including PFAS chemicals. But what if you only took out the PFAS chemicals? Like, what? What do you mean? What about all the other chemicals? Oh, well, we're just worried about the PFAS chemicals because that's what's in the government contract. No, you have to have a filter that takes out everything at the point of entry in the house. Because then everything that was in the city water pipes, everything that was in the aquifer, everything that came when it rained in the local community, and there's all the pollution that's in the ground, and all of that goes down into the water table, all of the recycled water that comes from the human waste treatment plant, and that goes in, is full of pharmaceuticals. How do you get rid of all that? There's only one way, one place to do it, and that's at the entry into the house or the business where the water comes in. And it's very inexpensive on a house-by-house basis. You know, you take a $300,000, $400,000 house and add a couple thousand dollars of cost so that the house can have clean water? I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. Okay, I wanted to talk about this because the government right now, is holding meetings with companies that are making baseless claims that cannot solve the problem. And, you know, to a person that's not a scientist, that doesn't have an ear for BS or doesn't have a good BS meter, like most government employees, they want to find a solution. They want to have it written on paper that they did what they were told to do. That's remove PFAS chemicals. And if they did that, they did their job. Not worrying about not doing a good job or a complete job or worrying about all the other chemicals that are in the water. All they do is they did their job. And they really didn't even do that, because you cannot scale these processes up to the level of the entire country. And so anyway, that's why I'm, when I do the products that I'm working with, the MR5 whole house water filter or the sink filter that's for sale on my webpage, these are products that will remove PFAS chemicals, chlorine, glyphosate, all of the long list of chemicals I've been talking about, arsenic, etc., so that you have the point of use clean water. So if people cannot afford a whole house water filter, I mean, if some people it just can't, then at least you should have a filter in your kitchen that removes this stuff. And it's very important. This is very bad stuff, but I'm telling people that the worst shot of the toxins that you get is in the daily shower. When you step into that shower, that hot steam, it's coming into your skin, and as you're breathing in the vapors, you're getting a royal dose of chemicals every day. They're cumulative. You have to get them out of the water before it gets to the shower, and these stupid little shower filters you screw on don't work. They simply don't work. It's a marketing scheme, I should say. Scam would imply that it's intentional, but whatever, you make that decision. You need something that's big, industrial, and it takes the water out, cleans the water for your entire house. So anyway, I cannot stress this enough, because clean water, and I'm getting more people now that are asking about energy. What I'm doing is I'm focusing on people that want to have emergency energy from wind energy with a farm or a ranch or a remote location, etc., and try and bring the cost down to a reasonable level so they have electricity, clean water, and then with the grow towers, food. People are waking up to the fact that they need grow towers to grow their vegetables. That's the one thing you're not going to be able to get in a real emergency is vegetables. You can grow your own in plentitude with the grow towers. So anyway, this is James McCanney. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.